of coming up.
Hi, this is Take Charge Your Health with Corrine Frenari, clinical nutritionist, clinician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye.
Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corrine Frenari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant, and my co-host, Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Every week, we present you with new and creative ways to help you make sense of health information and bring it home to you and your family. With years of clinical experience between us and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, we give you practical information to help you take charge of your health. Welcome back. This is Corrine.
Welcome back.
Hi, Carol.
Hi. Hi.
Yeah, it's the two of us together.
Yeah, special day.
One very special day. I've been away for a little while. We'll tell you about it on another show. And what I've gone through, boy, have I spent multiple weeks learning. If you hear some strange noises in the background, I'm in the hospital, and so sometimes there's lots of beeping and stuff, but I tried to turn all that off. But since this is our first day back, we chose a subject that is really something both Carol and I are totally interested in and would be very fun for you. So, Carol, we also have a guest.
Yes.
Who will be explaining the topic and we'll be able to question him. And guess what? The topic is testosterone. We're going to be talking about testosterone, and mostly, or very often, we do talk about testosterone, but it's directed toward females. Very often we speak about testosterone, mention males, but the talk is directed toward females. But today, we're going to be speaking about testosterone in males and why testosterone is less than 50% of what it was first measured at. Why it's estimated that 15 million men are low in testosterone, but less than 5% are getting treated there. So today we're going to be looking at myths and facts about testosterone and how we can help balance health through testosterone. What do you think, Carol?
Oh, I think we're in for a treat. So I'm going to introduce Nelson Virgil. And I met Nelson because of his Facebook pages. I was just hunting around for pages that had discussions about hormones. And I found two of them that are supported by Nelson. One is for women and one is for men. And I joined them both. They're extremely active. And then I made it a point to call Nelson and get to know who he is. And he so kindly doesn't push me off his Facebook page, as sometimes there's a little controversy there. But it's all good. So, Nelson, are you welcome to our show today? Nelson, are you there?
Yes. Thank you for having me.
Perfect. So, let me give you a little more background. So, it's from time to time you get to meet people who really take on a project or a learning. They go down rabbit holes. They just throw themselves into something entirely. And Nelson Virgil is such a person. And his background is chemical engineering. And I think some of the people that we've talked to in the past, don't necessarily have a medical MD or a nursing degree behind their name, but they've done far more research and have far more intellectual property gathered. So Nelson has written books on this subject. He is an avid sports person. He made learning about hormone therapy his passion. And he had been diagnosed with AIDS over 30 years ago. And one of the things about that was all your immune system is signaled by the hormone testosterone, yet it was difficult at the time for doctors to diagnose and realize how low these patients were and what a great help they could have with testosterone. And I know where I was compounding, we started doing a lot of testosterone compounding for the HIV community. And now I wonder, Nelson, if you weren't behind that push to get that done, because Nelson is first and foremost an activist. So welcome to our show, Nelson. Where should we start? Where would you like to start?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. And Corinne, I was so surprised when I talked to you yesterday. You were basically in a hospital room, and I'm sure you guys will talk about it in another episode, but talk about somebody that completely has overcome and keeps working. And I told Corinne that I feel very connected to her, because I wrote two of my books while I was recovering for surgery on a bed. So but I'm sure, obviously, I'm not comparing my experience with her, but you know, it shows you that while we go through health crisis and hopefully recover, those moments are like the most eye-opening for us, and some of us tend to either go crazy, get very depressed, or some of us get into action. So I think Corinne, definitely being already on her radio show, shows you what kind of person she is. So thank you for having me. So I don't know where you guys ladies want to start. I mean, this is such a broad topic.
Yes.
I would like to ask you, how did you get involved in this? You didn't just take care of your own health. You became an advocate for all of males, all males, males with immune problems. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was working 25 years ago with HIV patients, we would look at their NK cells, their natural killer cells, to see their immune activity and correlate that directly with testosterone. But the question I have for you is, how did you become this advocate? You're a chemical engineer, and look at what you're doing now. Maybe you could help us walk us through your journey.
Sure. Definitely something I did not go to school for. You guys can hear my accent. I'm from Venezuela, from South America. I moved here in 84, right in the middle of the whole crazy HIV stuff. We didn't even know there was a virus then. But anyways, moved here to go for a master's, and also, I met somebody, so I moved here. And Venezuela is like, back then it was a great place, not anymore. But there was still homophobia and all that. And obviously, as a gay man, I felt much better in the United States. So anyways, I came to the States, and maybe within a year, I realized that, I hear the news that there is this thing killing gay men, and they call it the gay disease. I don't know. They had a few names for that. And
The bowel syndrome, the gay bowel syndrome.
Yeah, all kinds of things.
Because people were dying through their bowels. They just couldn't keep food in or nutrients in. They would just be pouring fluid from their bowels till they just melted away.
Yeah, so wasting syndrome, or the loss of weight, severe loss, involuntary loss of weight, was the number two killer. Number one was PCP pneumonia. So pneumonia basically that is caused by this fungus that takes care of fungi, that takes over our lungs because of immune dysfunction. But anyways, fast forwarding, obviously I was scared, and at the same time I was in a monogamous relationship, what I thought it was. And so I thought, oh, well, that's for people that are using drugs, and we had all those horrible theories back then, and that doesn't pertain to me. But my partner at the time came one day and told me I got it tested, and he was positive. And so I went and ran to get tested. And that was before we even had ACT or anything. That was within 3 months that the test was actually developed and you know, put to use in the United States. So I just arrived here with an American dream in my mind, you know, just to, you know, make it big here in this country and finish my master's. So that was like a death sentence.
Yes, at that time it was.
Yeah. So I, you know, I mean, you know, Corinne, you know what it is to face a diagnosis that is so close to death, yet you either wake up or you crawl into a hole. You have two choices, basically, and some people choose one or the other. I really was, I said to myself, I didn't come to the States to die, that's for sure.
Let me just interject here. We will take call-ins for this show. So listeners, please jot down this number, 212-209-2877, if you have any questions or comments on this show. And So now you're facing a serious health problem. And how did your journey go? Did you find testosterone, the idea of testosterone, accidentally, or did you have something on your mind about this in the first place?
No, not at all. I spent basically the next 5-6 years. Back then, we had no internet. Remember that?
So to
find information, you had to basically call people. I started volunteering in two clinics here in Houston, providing, you know, telling people their blood test results, which was fun. And I was working as an engineer. I was in a double closet. I was in the closet about being gay and the closet about being positive with Shell Oil back in the day. So it was work during the day. At night, I would go to the clinics and work volunteer there. But anyways, that's when I found out there were some newsletters coming around and all that. And I was lucky enough to subscribe. You know, they would be sent by mail, by snail mail. And that's how I would get the news. But at the same time, everybody was wasting. My partner started losing, he lost like 40 pounds. His, you know, people were, you could tell by then who was positive and not. I mean, I live basically in the Montrose area in Houston, which is, back then, not anymore, everything has changed in this country, was predominantly gay, and you would go to the grocery store and there were lots of very thin men with big, dark spots on their faces, which was KS, is another virus that is a long story.
Carposi sarcoma.
Even for those that did not want to disclose, it was pretty obvious now that our bodies were telling everybody, hey, I have AIDS. So that was a horrifying thing. Everybody did not want to lose weight. That was the only thing that we knew that maybe could save us not to, and our doctors were kind of freaking out, telling us to eat ice cream and peanut butter and all the high calorie stuff. Well, but we had, like Corinne said, we had a digestive system problem too, where a lot of us were having diarrhea, etc. So it was, we were hit from all over the place. I was obviously working full time and trying to keep this a secret. And then slowly but surely, I started reading bodybuilding magazines because I was a skinny boy, but I was already losing weight, and people at work were telling me, "Are you okay? You look a little thin." And I was freaking out because I didn't want to be. Back then, they could have even fired you from your job. We didn't have the protection laws. We didn't have the American with Disabilities law that passed in the early 90s. But anyways. So I became obsessed with the whole, because I said, well, these guys in the bodybuilding magazines are putting on muscle. We're losing muscle. We're, you know, and this is not only men. These are women were getting hit too. Obviously, the first wave, the first, second, maybe two or three ways, were mostly gay men. But then I started moving towards the heterosexual community, and men and women, heterosexual women, were getting obviously infected. So anyway, so I became obsessed. I knew that there were risks with, you know, anabolic steroids. Testosterone really is an anabolic steroid.
Yes.
And it is approved at the FDA. And there were two other anabolic steroids three more that have been approved by FDA for other uses, mostly anemia, treatment of anemia, some of the labeled uses. So I was like looking into it, but I was terrified that even if I used any of that stuff, I would actually die faster. So it was like, until I read one article that saved my life from this doctor called Dr. Dolnick on a bodybuilding magazine. He came out, he said there, he was HIV positive, he had weight being wasting, and he started using high doses of testosterone and nandrolone, which is an anabolic steroid approved by the FDA too. And he put on, 50 pounds and he looked great. So I was like, oh my God, there's somebody up there already doing this. And so that's how I got in contact with him eventually. He was in contact with me and found out a lot about this. He was writing a book, etc. Anyways, I'm going to fast forward because the story can get long and I don't want to take too long. And he had been doing great, but obviously testosterone and anabolics do not improve the immune system per se. I mean, T cells, people are still losing CD4 cells, the main cells of the immune system. And even though the weight had returned, many of us felt better, looked better, but some people, especially him, Dr. Dolnick, had already depleted a lot of his immune system. So he eventually developed CMV retinitis, which is another virus that attacks your eyes when you are immune suppressed. And he called me, he said he was gonna put an end to his life and he was gonna ship all his research papers and blah, blah, blah book to me, and I was going to finish his work. So that's how I started this whole crazy journey. Yeah, and then I basically came out of work and told them, listen, I have my life purpose is no longer being an engineer in a refinery, but I do have to save myself and everybody else. So yeah, that's just in a nutshell.
Well, that's a wonderful story. It really is. It's a wonderful story. And looking at your body of work, you've really stayed true to it. Now, there, I want to talk about, people, less than 5% of the people who are physically low in testosterone are being treated. And part of that is that there's so many myths that are out about testosterone. So many people are afraid of testosterone. And here I am doing research for this show, and I'm seeing study after study where testosterone protects against cardiovascular disease and creates vascularization and increased circulation to the periphery. That's exactly what the opposite of what people say. Oh, testosterone will give you a heart attack. When the studies show, there's a new study, relatively new, out of MD Anderson showing how testosterone protects the heart. There's another study, a large clinical study out of Rotterdam, the Netherlands, showing how testosterone protects the heart. So what you're doing is, you're busy kind of fighting the stereotypes about testosterone and males, and there are many more. We can go through one after another and discuss them. So what do you think about that and the myths that are out about testosterone and its need in the body?
I think I do agree with you. There's still a lot of fear, especially with the cardiovascular system, with the prostate, you name it. I mean, roid rage, they call it, you're going to become aggressive and violent and injure somebody. I mean, you name it, there's a lot. But I do have to say, we're in 2022 now, and I started this work in 91.
Wow.
So it has changed dramatically. Obviously, the pioneers in this work. We're people with HIV. Why? Because we had our risk to benefit ratio was different. We're gonna die anyways, and that's why one of my friends told me, "You're gonna die anyways, Nelson. So at least gain some weight and look like and have a good life until we all die." Really, I mean, it's what happened. When I gained weight, I felt great, and nobody at work ever asked me again if I was sick. So I bought time. I really bought time until the drugs came in, the good ones, and saved us. But anyways. So what happened since the 90s is that we have been debunking a lot of the myths, the prostate-related cancer myth, which was the biggest one.
Yes.
Which was debunked in the early 2000s or so, when a lot of meta-analysis and studies, you know, were done. And in fact, is men, why do men with low testosterone, when they're getting older, start getting more prostate cancer, right? They usually is when they're getting older. So there's a lot of data that is confusing, but at the same time, what do they do now if you have aggressive prostate cancer? They block your testosterone. So people get confused and say, wait a minute, you're telling me it's not bad for the prostate, but now we're finding out that giving people with prostate cancer a certain type of genotype, actually a higher dose of testosterone can actually improve their cancer outcome. So it's all over the place, and yet now we definitely, on the prostate side, is not, doctors are not responding with such visceral response, right? But in the cardiovascular side, it's the same thing. Men with low testosterone tend to have worse cardiovascular outcomes. But what happens is when men get on testosterone, they have to be monitored. They have to be followed. There is something that happens. The number one side effect that happens is the increase in red blood cells, which is great if you have anemia and you're tired. It's amazing, obviously very good. But if you overproduce red blood cells, and that's what we call the hematocrit, your blood viscosity will eventually increase. So that is why, and that's what I'm seeing out there. I see there was an explosion maybe around 10 years ago of testosterone clinics, mostly telemedicine.
Oh, yes. You just walk in and you get a testosterone shot.
You don't even walk in. It's on the telephone.
And with COVID, it actually exploded even more so. As you well know, telemedicine became the winner of this whole thing. But anyways, so I see a lot of misuse, a lot of overdosing. I own a blood testing company called Discounted Labs, so I see what guys are doing out there, because my niche is hormones, not only for men, by the way, because I also do some work with women, but I see what people are running. They're really hot, running like 1,500 nanograms of testosterone in their body. So that's when we get into the, is testosterone bad for you? You know, nothing is good or bad in the hormone world. We're talking about balance.
Exactly.
Balance.
So that's what I see in my office. You know, all these side effects, these negative side effects that they talk about, I've never seen them in my patients. First of all, I do a blood test when they come in. Then after they've been on the hormone for 6 weeks, I do another blood test. And then I prescribe the appropriate amount. I love, and Carol will back me on this one, I love the non-alcoholic gels that people can rub on. Testosterone has a natural rhythm. It's high in the morning. That's why males, very often they'll, in their sleep or first thing in the morning, they'll get an erection. Why? Because their testosterone is at the peak after they sleep. Sleep is an important part of creating testosterone. Then it goes down throughout the day, and then when you sleep again, you build up your testosterone. So I love the gels because you can mimic that rhythm naturally and just rub it on your body. I like the non-alcoholic gels, and people feel great. When you use they have a once a month shot. If you use a once a month shot, for 1 week you feel great, and for 3 weeks you don't feel that well because your testosterone is dropping and dropping and dropping, and you've had the comparison of a... So I find that the gels, you can balance that. They used to have patches, but people were getting reactions to the patches. And the favorite right now are the injections, once every 2 week injection, which I find the gels are better, and you get the gels through compounding pharmacies. What do you think, Carol?
Well, I think Nelson should come in here because what I'm seeing on his Facebook page is not more frequent injections. So maybe you could sort that out for us, Nelson.
Yeah. In the past, that's really changed. Let me just clarify what Corinne says is what's on the label, the prescription label of injectables, like tacipionate or anything. Really, they say one injection every 2 weeks. And I would say, I don't have all the numbers in front of me, but I would say at least half of the doctors out there that don't have a lot of experience are prescribing it that way. And that's the way I used to be prescribed back in the days too. But we have found in the past maybe 10 years or so, and believe it or not, we got the best data from the transgender community, that doing subcutaneous under the skin, or what we call shallow IM, very shallow injections with an insulin syringe, where now it's becoming popular. I've been basically doing videos on that for 10 years, and where basically men are injecting smaller doses twice a week. Most people think that's okay with them. On the under the skin in the abdominal area, or at 90 degrees on the shoulders, with a very tiny half an inch syringe, unlike the old days. The old days we have to inject with a 1.5 syringe on the butt, and they used to tell us, oh, it has to be deep intramuscular. Now we have we actually have data that the sub-Q and the shallow IM works as good or better when it comes to blood levels. So that's really what's become the trend, especially with all the telemedicine clinics, and they're probably easily over 600 or maybe over 1,000 of them in the United States, believe it or not. And urologists, and the urology world has become the leader when it comes to research. So here in Houston, I'm very lucky to be at close to Baylor College of Medicine, where Dr. Lipschultz and his urology group are basically publishing most of the studies, avant-garde studies on testosterone and other hormones. And we also have like Empower Pharmacy here in Houston, which is one of the largest pharmacy and compounding pharmacies in the country for hormones. So things have changed a lot. I mean, since my days of back in the 90s, I do see a lot of progress, mostly. Insurance-wise, I don't see progress. I actually see more barriers because they insist that you have to have a testosterone of 250 or, if you're lucky, 300 nanograms to be considered for payment of your product. But that's why I see more problems trying to get insurance to pay for whatever, creams, gels, injections. Mm-hmm. We have a nasal spray. Now we have, you name it. We have pellets. We have, what else do we have? We have orals, two non-liver toxic orals. I mean, the whole world has evolved. This is a large market, as you well know. So I think more and more men are getting tested. Obviously, there are companies like me that where you can buy your own testosterone test for $40 without going to see a doctor, and you can see whether or not you what range you are before you seek help. So there's a lot more options. Like the VA system is limited. Some HMOs are very limited. So I do see access issues, but we're in a much better situation than we were even 10 years ago.
That's so wonderful. Let me just interject here with the phone number again, 212-209-2877, if you'd like to call in with questions and comments for Nelson. That would be very nice. I'd like to just jump over to another important male hormone, and that's estradiol. And the first thing, I'm at this conference. I'm actually at Frank Schellenberger's Ozone Conference today. And I'm working at a booth. And the first woman who came to visit my booth said, "What do you think about estradiol in men?" And I said, "They need it." And then she visibly relaxed because she knew I knew what I was talking about. Anyway, so could you say a few words about estrogen? Because we have this testosterone for men, estrogens for women, and nowhere do we cross. And that's another myth that we should shatter today.
Oh, Carol, you know, because you've seen my world. You've seen my
yes.
world. You know. Yep. I've been trying to change minds, not as long as you ladies have, because you've been in this, but at least for the last 15 years, to make men understand that estrogen, or estradiol is the main estrogen in men, or mostly women too, is important, is not an enemy, is not poison, is not something that you have to block with an estrogen blocker. Because more and more data, and thank God we just, I'm actually publishing a video by the end of the week, maybe or tomorrow, on the latest study from Basine. Dr. Basine is like the god of endocrinology. Even back in the HIV days, he helped us out a lot. But anyways, he has found out that men that get on testosterone and see the largest increases in estradiol, because basically estradiol comes from testosterone, from aromatization, and only 0.4%, 0.4% of testosterone becomes converts into estradiol in fat tissue, in the liver, in the testicles. And so nature put a little bit of estradiol in our bodies, in men, just to do something, right? I mean, evolution is a very smart thing. We've been evolving for, thousands of years. And this is really the most important, is the cognitive part of it, mood and libido, sex drive. Sex drive in three studies, actually pretty well done studies, was mostly linked to estradiol in men. Yes, free testosterone has obviously a role, but with that, if you block estradiol, that's what happens in my forums. People come in saying, "Oh my God, my doctor gave me an estrogen blocker, and I have no sex drive. They complain, "I have no sex drive," or get this, this is even more kind of strange. "I have no sensitivity in my penis at all."
Yeah.
So, and I said, "Well, are you taking an estrosol?" "Yeah, 1 milligram twice a day, humongous dose too." So,
oh my God.
We're learning now and trying, but you know, the thing about, and you ladies have been around in trying to educate, that it's when you educating people constantly, and new people are coming into the world, right, into our networks.
Yes.
And those new people ask the same question. You have to cut and paste. And there's hopefully now what I see, thank God, after so many years of frustration, that people, other very smart people, become advocates too. They start picking up information and spreading it and helping others. So we become hopefully less and less valuable. I really want to just retire and not talk about this anymore, but I still am at 63. I was supposed to die at 24 and 63.
Oh, yeah.
But obviously,
you're doomed in another way.
Yeah, so people are saying, "Why are you still doing this? Are you not tired of it?" It says, "No, because people keep asking the same questions, even though we have a lot of people."
Because they're starting from the same point.
Yeah.
Even though it's 20 years later, where their beginning is the same point that someone started 20 years ago, unless they've done tremendous amounts of research. But there are two things I want to say. About 17 years ago, we had Dr. Steven Sinatra come on. Mm-hmm. And he's a cardiologist, very well-known cardiologist, holistic cardiologist. And he talked about the fact that they had these estrogen blockers for males that were so strong that they had to stop them because males were having heart attacks. Mm-hmm. And so that, and he did this whole talk on understanding that there is a need for a low-level estrogen in males, as well as there's a need for estrogen in females. But then there's one other thing. Many years ago, I went to a conference where there was a vascular surgeon there, and he was talking about ulcerations, stasis ulcers on the ankles and the shins. And he said, you know, I used to do surgery on them, and very few times they were successful. You could give them a little more time, give people a little more time, but the ulcer would open up again, and you really couldn't get the circulation going. He said, and then I started using testosterone. Mm. And what we know about testosterone is it's a vascular dilator. Mm-hmm. It has nitric oxide, NO, and it stimulates the veins and arteries to dilate, similar to what many people are taking, a calcium channel blocker. It has the same
estrogen. You're talking about calcium channel blockers, which really the natural one is magnesium. To relax your circulation.
And so it's interesting because whenever you go to a conference and you talk about something, the next day walks in exactly the case that they were teaching you about. So that week someone walks in with these giant oozing stasis ulcers, and I said, oh, testosterone. And within 2 weeks, they had healed up and circulation had increased. It was stunning. The doctor I was working with in the office came in. All the people in my office came in to see the progress. But we had literally closed up those ulcers with the use of testosterone, increasing circulation to the periphery. What is an erection? An erection, yep. Circulation to the periphery. Mm. And I was listening today to a Dr. Ludlow, a urologist, mm-hmm. in Chicago, and he was talking about your best friend can be erectile dysfunction. Because if you have erectile dysfunction, very often you have cardiovascular disease blocking circulation. And people come in thinking that they have a problem and need testosterone, when in actuality they need a workup for cardiovascular disease. And testosterone might be part of the protocol, but it's not all the protocol. It's not mm-hmm. the complete problem. Mm-hmm. So then there's one other quick thing that I will say. I've gotten a little carried away, but I've seen this so often, is that, you know, we're talking about testosterone, estrogen, and testosterone converting to estrogen. Well, we know that there are those enzymes in the belly that convert the testosterone to estrogen. So I always, it's not a one-trick pony. You walk in the door, you get testosterone. No, you work on a diet. You get off a beer. You don't drink soy milk. You start working on that belly so it's not sitting there ready to convert any testosterone that you happen to bring into your body into estrogen. You want the balance, and the balance happens through health, and it's a full body program. That's what Carol and I talk about all the time, the full body relationship to all these hormones. It's just not, I'll just take a hormone and it'll be done. It's a full body relationship.
Mm-hmm. That's a really, really good point, Corinne. I'd like to also, as a resource for people, it was from the Broda Barnes Foundation. I learned about a book written by Jens Mueller, and I wonder if you've ever seen this book, Nelson.
Oh, yes.
It's called Testosterone. And what the basis for this work was very, very much like Corinne was just talking about, these circulatory people, diabetic people about to lose parts of their toes or their feet, people in severe cardiovascular distress. Jens Mueller would use very large doses of testosterone, and he actually used the same very large doses of testosterone for women, and he saved a lot of limbs, and he had a lot of heart recoveries, but the women were complaining because their voices were changing, and they were losing some hair. Yeah, his dose was too high, but then he said, well, would you rather be dead? So
When did he write this? In the 50s?
Yeah, something like that. It's really quite old. And having such dramatic results, you would think it would be standard of practice today. But no, we still prefer to lop off people's toes and feet, and for people with diabetic ulcers and stuff. And you know, the whole sense of that makes no sense. So you have a wound you can't fix, and then you create a new wound just a little bit someplace else. It's a terrible situation. And I would say, and I bet both of you would agree, that for a primary workup for just about anything, you really should be looking at hormones as a prime indicator. And for those who are in, you can look on Nelson's website. He does have, this is not a thing usually available in New York. It's a real pity. I think people in New York, listeners, you need to be active and get some of your regulations changed. You're the only state in the union who does not allow two things. One, they don't allow direct-to-consumer testing, and also they don't allow access to some very wonderful, unique tests. So your ability to really dig into your health problems is compromised. This is a serious problem. Your medical organizations are preventing you from finding out what's wrong with you. So
what your body needs to create balance.
That's right. So this is a bad state of affairs, but this is what Nelson's put together, and he's not the only one, but he particularly focuses on hormones because there's other direct consumer labs to check that. And it's really lovely. As Nelson's talking about how things have really changed, this also has changed. When you as a health consumer can, let's say you've read up about testosterone, and Nelson's telling you for $40 you can see where your testosterone is. How valuable is that? That I agree you should be testing a whole lot more, and he does have some nice panels on his pages. But I'd say to everybody, keep up with Nelson, because you can ask your doctor for these tests, and you should be. These are some pretty fundamental testing, and New York in general, you've got to step out and get some action done and stop having this paralyzing political issue trapping practitioners in New York State, making it very difficult for them to treat you as well as they could.
And follow you appropriately.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I'm off your health.
I'm off my bandwagon now.
Okay, each of us, 1, 2, 3, have gone on the bandwagon. Remember to call us 212-209-2877. We'd love to hear from you. And you know what else? We know we've touched some area of a topic that would be interesting to you. So call in, ask questions. I'm totally impressed with Nelson and what he's done to, you know, activism is such a powerful thing. How one person could make such a difference in so many people's life. And it's one person. He decided that he was going about to study and learn and share what he had accumulated, the information. And that's what he's been doing. But he also added on to that the ability to be tested. How many people go into doctor's office and they refuse to test hormones? Oh, no, you don't want that. You're too old. You're not going to get hormones. I'm not going to give you hormones, which is one of the more important things that you could do for your brain to protect your bones, to protect your immune system. You know, testosterone works very uniquely in directing the mesenchymal stem cells to differentiate. So it's very important if people are losing their memory and they're making some degree of stem cells, testosterone could be a very important piece of that program that can direct those stem cells to where your body needs them. It's something that should be looked at as a regular therapy and available to anybody who would want it. But doctors have been fed this myth and they're afraid of testosterone. But when you take the appropriate testing, when you do a test in the beginning, and then you do a test after 8 weeks, and then you leave people on and do a test in another 3 months, you're watching very carefully, and it's a very powerful and appropriate therapy. And all these negative side effects that they talk about, deep voice, hair loss, this and that, I personally in my practice have never seen that because I don't over-treat. I don't give too much testosterone or too much estrogen or too much progesterone. I give a very appropriate amount to the individual's bodies and physical needs. Nelson?
Time for your soapbox.
Well, I wanted to, and it's getting, I hate to drop this topic at the end, but we're about to get shaken up really hard in the hormone world, very hard by the FDA.
I created
a website called hormoneaccesscoalition.org, hormoneaccesscoalition.org. And that in that website, I have all the information on what's happening. They're going to try to ban the production of 11 hormones by compounding pharmacies. And these are pharmacies that Corinne and Carol have mentioned that make customized, you know, gels, creams, injections. They do everything. And extremely important, and that's something else I want to say before we end, especially in the for the treatment of women, we have not a single FDA product approved for the treatment of low testosterone in women.
Right.
Okay, not one. I mean, there are two companies that were rejected. Their data was rejected, not because the data wasn't good, but it's basically some study variables that they did not agree with. But the only source of testosterone products for women are coming from compounding pharmacies. These are pharmacies all over the country that make all kinds of products. The industry is old. It's actually older than pharmaceutical companies.
Pharmacies
used to make this even 200 years ago. So right. So this is disturbing. I'm usually a friend of FDA. We worked very closely through the HIV world when I was an activist for HIV, but that was a different group that was very friendly to us. But this is a biologics group and also a group that is basically already hired NASM to write this huge review that concluded that compounded hormones were not safe, which
or effective.
And we know there are easily 65,000 patients taking, I'm one of them, getting treated with compounded hormones, and they're going to try to block and ban them. So if you care about this subject, go to hormoneaccesscoalition.org and sign up there, or you can send emails to your Congress people and to the FDA directly. It's a pretty nifty software that I'm using there for you directly to send to everybody in Congress.
I told you that this would happen right at the end. People would be hearing and then they'd have questions. So we have two callers, or did. Hopefully they stayed on. I'd like to hear from the first one. We don't have a lot of time. So, hi, you're live on WBAI? Hello?
Hello?
Hi, you're live. Hello. How can I help you? How can we help you?
talking to me?
I'm Corrine Frenari. Did you call? Yeah, WBAI for the radio station.
Okay. Okay. Yes. My name's Kurt, and I'm 55 years old, and I'm on testosterone replacement therapy, and I also also take anastrozole. I was told I need to take it to counter the effect of the estrogen.
That's one of the things we've just been talking about. See, you said I'm 35. I want testosterone. 55. First of all,
no, 55.
Oh, I'm sorry. 55.
Yes.
First of all, I'd love to see what your testosterone level is. That's really important. And also, now this is a tough test to take, and it's tough to get right. I'd like to know what your sex-binding hormone is.
I've never been tested for that. I don't recall being tested for that. I don't recall that.
I'd love to know what your pre-testosterone is. What do you think?
This is what I think, okay? And I have over 25 articles you can read on my website called excelmale.com. That's excelmale.com, excelmail.
Okay.
And my lab testing company where you can buy your own lab tests is discountedlabs.com. But anyways, this is two things that I'm seeing, and it's a number one problem with mostly telemedicine companies. Most men do not need an estrosol. An estrosol, testosterone is supposed to be converted at a rate of 0.4% into estrogen, into estradiol, to provide many benefits. And without estradiol, libido is not the same. Basal dilation, or the way the capillaries and arteries expand to let blood flow, is not the same. Your cholesterol tends to be worse when your estradiol is low. So guys that are coming to my site, and there are over 45,000 of them, are usually complaining of having crashed their estradiol with an estrosol, which is really a breast cancer drug that is used for breast cancer. I think companies and telemedicine companies are just over prescribing this product without really looking at the ratio of testosterone to estrogen. The other problem that we're seeing is that the testing assay, the type of test they're using for estradiol, is the wrong one. They're using a null assay that tends to overestimate the value of estradiol in men. So you have to ask your doctor to test you for sensitive estradiol, the sensitive assay, which is the only assay I sell on this Discount Labs. That's a $42 test too. Chances are when you test with the right test, your estradiol is also lower. So there are many problems with, I've never taken an estrosol. I've been on testosterone for 38 years. Most of my guys don't take an estrosol.
But you're also not eating sugar all day and bread and
I'm not gonna lie. I eat sweets. I mean,
estrogen, which also drinking soy milk all things that stimulate estrogen.
But I want to say,
create an estrogen reduction through the way you eat, through eating correctly. So I want to thank you for your question. We have one more person on the line. I'd love to hear their question, see what they have to say. Yeah, so remember this. Hormones are stimulated through what we eat in our lifestyle. And insulin is an incredible hormone stimulator. And that's straight stimulated through foods and the way we eat. So understand, look deeper than just the hormone. Hi, you're live on BAI. Can we help you?
Hello.
Hi, do you have a question? We got about 2 minutes.
Okay, I have been on finasteride Proscar for about 4 years, and it hasn't affected my testosterone level, but it has affected my libido.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
You, Is there a mechanism of action that you could explain to me that I could do maybe less finasteride or something else instead of finasteride?
Yeah. I would Google finasteride syndrome. It's very well known. It's actually very well published, the problem with blocking DHT. DHT, obviously, people blame DHT for hair loss and acne and many other things, for even prostatic hyperplasia. But DHT is very important, especially for libido. And using finasteride in many men, over 50% of men, has been associated with lower libido. And some people actually get off the medication and they stay with low libido for a while, for a long time. It's called finasteride. So Google finasteride syndrome, and you'll find a lot of information on. Or go to my website, excelmail.com. We have a whole section on finasteride and the issues that it causes when it comes to blocking DHT. DHT is very important. DHT is a metabolite of testosterone, around 10% of testosterone, that is really linked with libido and some cognitive functions. So some men have opted not to worry too much about their hair and actually, you know, shave their head because they were losing libido in such a way that they made them think twice about. I think Rogaine, using a Rogaine foam on the scalp is probably as effective, and it does not cause the libido issues that some men are seeing.
Yeah, libido has to do with quality of life. The ability to enjoy your life and the quality of life and the ability to share yourself with your partner or with another. And to just cut that out of your life, it isn't necessary. It's very sad. There are options, but just like Nelson did, they had to be researched. Luckily, we have Nelson, so we can look and do research through him and even ask him questions and get help there. So that's really wonderful. I want to thank you for your questions. You really, both of you, added to the show. I want to thank you, Nelson, for being here with us. You really, you showed us the power of activism, of one man who's willing to literally start changing the world and changing the attitudes. I'm very, very proud of you. And I want to thank you, Carol. You gave me confidence to come back.
Yes, about time.
And I want to thank you, Reggie. You're wonderful as always. You make it easy to be here on the radio. And we will be back next week. Maybe we can talk, Carol, a little more about testosterone and the myths that are just being exploded one after another. I would love to. Let's see if we could do that, a little bit of that next week. So,
okay.
Thank you, Nelson.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Yeah, and I hope everybody got Nelson's
websites.
But I also will go on our Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health with Corinne and Carol, and I'll have them there, and I'll also put it in the information for the show archive.
So we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
In conclusion, I'd like to say, remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
Greetings, I'm Linda Perry, Program Director here at WBAI, inviting you to join me and General Station Manager Bertol Reimers for our Report to the Listener, Monday evening, June 6th from 10 p.m. to midnight. That's WBAI's Station Manager and Program Director delivering our Report to the Listener and taking your calls at 212-209-2877. Please join us.
Friday. The previous program was Take Charge of Your Health, and that is heard on Thursdays at 2 p.m. Stay tuned for Resistance Radio, and this